Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Buying a home can feel like navigating uncharted waters. Redfin agents can help. They'll answer your questions with honest advice so you know exactly what you're getting into. They'll also help you tour as many homes as you want and show you what it takes to make a winning offer. With a Redfin agent on your side, you can sail straight to your dream home. Local expertise from Redfin. That's real estate done right. Tour subject to property and agent availability. Virginia Office Falls Church, VA, 844-759-7732.
Hello, my name is David Tapley, and there will be no encore. Yes, that's right. I'm sitting in for my good friend Calm today because he has chosen Cork over friendship, music, and is not being loyal to the loyal listeners of No Encore.
He's a traitor, pretty much.
I'm also here. Hi. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, who's this guy?
Hi, I sometimes host the show. My name is Dave Hanrady.
Well, and there will be quite the psych out there.
and there will be Craig Fitzpatrick.
Oh, that's me! Yay!
How's it going?
It's three of us. It's all very exciting. Colm's not here, yeah.
But who is David Tapley? Craig, why don't you tell us about the person sitting in front
like
of you?
Like the soul of the man.
Sure, why not?
He's a villainous character. Untrustworthy.
He's the mastermind behind famously dormant band Tandem Felix.
Yes, that's right. Much loved, much missed.
What's going on there? Say?
Well, like any dormant volcano, there's always the threat of eruption at any moment, so we will be back one day, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but we will be releasing music later this day.
Okay, that's very good. He wants to go on the show to break his silence, and that's a broken silence if I've ever heard
one. Yeah, I loved
it.
It was very Batman-esque.
Thank you.
It was. Batman-esque. I don't know. I feel like you want to talk about movies, Craig, because I went to see a Batman film during the week.
Your favourite of all the Batmen?
Maybe. I saw Batman Forever in the Lighthouse Cinema in Dublin.
I always get these confused with Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin was the terrible one, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, so Batman Forever was the one with the amazing soundtrack.
Yes, fantastic soundtrack. U2, Home Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me on the end credits. Kiss From a Rose isn't in the film, though, by Seal.
It's at the very end.
At the very end of the very end credits.
They changed the rules for winning the Oscar, haven't they? That needs to be, there's some strange stipulation, like it needs to be within 30 seconds of the end credits.
That's really strange.
Yeah.
That's fair though, right?
I guess.
You can just tack on anything and be like, eh.
Maybe, possibly.
Well, in this case, did Seal write that song for the film?
I don't know, I was too busy being distracted by Val Kilmer's angst and Jim Carrey screaming in every scene.
Yeah.
That's true.
Tommy Lee Jones doing his version of the Joker, Chris O'Donnell with a giant earring. It was all happening.
Yes.
It doesn't sound like a good film. I mean, you're...
It's got problems.
Yeah.
It's got Nicole Kidman's character, who's the most sexually charged character I've ever seen in a kid's movie. She is
Who
just,
does she play again?
She plays Dr. Chase Meridian.
Oh, yeah.
And from scene one, all she wants to do is fuck. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And she can't decide between Bruce Wayne or Batman. Luckily,
well,
the same guy.
Yeah. Problem solved.
This is a film in which Batman gets shot in the head. It's weird.
He gets shot in the head. I haven't seen this.
Is that how Val Kilmer dies in the end? No. They're like, we better get a new Batman.
Let's get George Clooney. Let's get George Clooney.
Well, like in Batman, your intros are usually very good. Mine today was better.
Yep, good. Good.
The
one.
Difference?
Showmanship.
I actually couldn't remember the next
one. Oh, showmanship. Very good. It's Batman Forever reference. So listen, there was another thing about a 90s film during the week. Our good friend Joshua Hughes saw something on Reddit, and it was one of those threads, and it said something to the effect of, what a quote-unquote good character from a film or a TV show is actually a horrible person. And Josh was disgusted that some 14,000 replies in at the time, not a single person had said Mrs. Doubtfire.
Right.
Of wacky family comedy, 1993, Mrs. Doubtfire. Now, this is not—it's not a new thing.
Yeah,
to
it's
be
kind
like
of taken as read at this stage as a psychopath, right?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, like, there's a great article online entitled "Mrs. Doubtfire is actually a dark film about an extremely deranged man," and it's one of those lists. And there's like 16 different reasons why. I'm not going to read them all out, but what I will say is, you know, this is a film in which he attempts to kill Pierce Brosnan. And during the film, because, you know, Pierce Brosnan takes over his family or whatever, even though Robin Williams' character is completely deranged and terrible at being a father and being a husband. And then, later in the film, he tries to murder Pierce Brosnan. And you never get the scene in the film where Pierce Brosnan is shown to be, like, a horrible heel. Mm-hmm. He's just a nice guy. He doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
It's weird.
His name is Stew, which, as we all know, is more of a thick soup than a name.
The way this is written out in the preamble, I assumed you'd gone to see Mrs. Doubtfire this week as well. I was just like, wow, quite the trips to the cinema you're having.
I wouldn't leave the cinema until they put on Mrs. Doubtfire. But like, okay, so I'm going to read out one of them, right? So one of the headlines is, Robin Williams gaslights a sad old man and breaks his heart. And it says, Mrs. Doubtfire contains one of the most hauntingly sad scenes in modern cinema, and it takes less than a minute. After Robin Williams shenanigans his way into working for / stalking his own family, he has to take the late bus home most evenings. The bus is driven by an older, clearly single man, and there are usually only two people on the vehicle. He seems like the sweetest guy. He compliments Robin Williams' hairy legs, saying that they're natural, healthy, just the way God made you. It seems almost painfully obvious that the highlight of this bus driver's day is flirting with a single Irish age-appropriate woman. Robin Williams never reveals his true identity to the man, and even politely refuses to go on a date with him in a deleted scene. Yeah, he's playing Irish / Scottish / whatever.
Scottish, surely.
So, this deleted scene reveals that this guy's also a recent widower. Now, the problem is, he's going to figure out what has happened, and he's going to be devastated. At the end of the movie, Mrs. Doubtfire gets her own television show. This poor man is going to see her all over television, and maybe, tragically, on the side of his own bus, check the credits to find out her name, and realise it's a guy. It's going to crush him, and it'll be all her fault.
Yeah, it's pretty dark, right?
It's a dark film.
Yeah.
Even when I saw it as a kid, I was like, something's wrong here, man. This is a weird movie.
I actually just watched, on a similar topic, watched Tootsie the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Which has a similar theme of Dustin Hoffman has to dress up as a woman to get a film role. But then the reason he gets the film role is because he keeps sticking up for women and women actors, which is, at the onset of the film, I was like, this is actually really progressive. But then after a while, there's a scene where, I can't remember the female lead, Jessica Lange,
yeah,
is unable to stand up for herself, and she walks sheepishly off to the side whilst Dustin Hoffman, a man, stands up for her. And I was like, I think this is very regressive, in fact.
Yeah, but wasn't there that video doing the rounds a few years ago where Dustin Hoffman was talking about being in Tootsie, and it was just like, when I was putting on my makeup and looking in the mirror, I started crying because I realized this is what it must feel like to be a woman and the pressure and all that kind of stuff. And
Jesus.
He just like breaks down and everyone's like, what a guy. Mm.
There's a lot of body horror in Mrs. Doubtfire as well.
Yeah, and there is.
And
kind
that
of,
was,
yeah,
there,
more,
there
yeah.
really is, like Cronenberg stuff. Yeah,
it's very Uncanny Valley.
To quote the article again, your man says, the scene where Robin Williams slams his body against a bathroom stall while he jams himself into a blouse had to have birthed at least two different fetishes when it was first shown in theaters.
I feel like Robin Williams does a good job in that, because you kind of do buy into Mrs. Doubtfire being a real kind of Scottish nanny for large stretches of that. Certainly I did. I was like, what?
The magic of the movies.
Yeah,
okay.
I got into it.
I should point out at this point that we are a music podcast.
There's music in that film, yes. I'm sure, somewhere.
And if you want to hear us talking live about music and some films from the past, come to our live show on September the 28th in Whelans, headlined by Overhead the Albatross. We'll also be performances from Dahi and Elaine May. €12 on Ticketmaster, yeah. And we'll be there. And Cullen will be there as
awesome.
Well.
Awesome. He'll be back, yeah.
So come to the show. What's been going on in the world of news, guys? Hang on. Sorry, before we get there, you went to a gig. We don't go to gigs, but you did.
I went to a gig, yeah. I went to the Beatyard Festival this Ooh. Sunday.
He took notes, like
and
a
I
journalist.
Took notes, yes, which, as you can see from the handwriting here, obviously this yeah. isn't a podcast, not very visual. It is the worst. It looks like I was getting progressively drunker as the night went
Were
on.
Were you getting progressively drunker?
Well, let me tell you that Beck's
at 6.50 a pop. No, I was not getting very drunk at all. In fact, I at one point favoured a bottle of water over some of that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so to give this precursor, I got a ticket half price.
Right.
Because I feel like they needed to sell them half price. But it actually was very full. And at one point, my friend Stephen said to me, how many people here do you think came because of the half price tickets?
It worked out well for them.
Yeah, in summary, though, it was 30 quid, and 30 quid to see Air is about worth it. Everything else that happened is fairly...
I just saw lots of people in, like, sailor hats.
Yeah, there must have been some free sailor hats.
You didn't get one?
I did not get one.
That's pity.
I did not bring my sailor hat that I actually do own from a childhood Halloween costume. yeah, so I first thing I saw as I was... I case the joint to start off, and I went into the, as they seem to have now at a lot of these festivals, they have a sort of a speaking tent, not necessarily a poetry or comedy tent, but in this particular one there was a caramel making class, and the first thing, music podcast I know, but caramel.
No, let's go deep on this, man. I want to know.
So I learned that it's very hard to cook, but it burns easily and can turn black, and you don't want that because it goes bitter. And at which point I turned around and walked back outside. I got a guy, usually at these festivals, you know, there's a lot of debauchery going on. And a guy came up and tried to push one of his organic, delicious smoothies on me. And when I said no, he replied, "Are you sure?" So I was very sure.
Yeah, if a random bloke is just pushing organic shit your way, you're just kind of like, I don't know. What went into this? What kind of, you know, practices and kind of standards and health, yeah.
Do they have an oxygen bar though?
They did not have an oxygen bar.
Some shirtless guy.
They didn't.
Barely a festival.
Being creepy.
So the first person I saw was Toots and the Maytals, who, according to him, played just their number ones.
Oh shit!
At which point, my friend turned to me and said, "In which country?" yeah, that was a funny one because while he's a very old man, he's still kicking at the jams at in his old age. He didn't know the names of his musicians, apparently, and kept referring to them as his musicians, as my musicians.
I love that. It's old school.
Toots. I don't know. I may be out in my estimation of reggae music here, but it's got such a short shelf life in a live setting. It was like 20 minutes. So I was like, maybe I love reggae. This is a lot of fun. And then
it's a life-altering kind of realization.
And 10 minutes later, I realized, no, this is... not going anywhere. So, there was good vibes, though, and he told us to believe in the God Almighty, so I left feeling very positive after that.
Jeez.
But yes, he also said, I love Jamaica like I love Ireland and the UK.
He's all about the love.
So that was the first thing I saw. then I went inside, which they have an inside area now, which everyone ran to as it started to rain. And it was
basket,
like,
weaving now or something.
It wasn't basket weaving. It was some old chap. I used the word chap. I won't read out what I wrote down in my notebook. But it was like neon blue and purple. The only drinks they sold were Red Bull and vodka. It was like my 21st all over again. It was pretty poor. Anyway, we just waited for the rain to subside. And then...
it's getting increasingly grim, I love it.
Yeah. And then...
the worst day ever.
I know.
So did it get better?
It got slightly better. Morsheba played, and we went back outside to see Morsheba. And they had, my favourite thing of that set was they had a disco ball. You know, you think a disco ball, what is a disco ball's one main function except for the lights, you know? When you think of a disco ball, what is it doing? It's spinning, right?
Yeah.
This disco ball was just like propped on a cymbal stand, and it was like 5 feet off the ground. It was the laziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's not fulfilling its disco ball destiny.
It's
like,
not, no. It's just, it's just a ball, really. So then we waited around for a bit. I think at this point I broke the bank and got one of those sweet, sweet Becks. And
my God.
Air were the headliner for the Sunday night. And that was absolutely terrific. I have to admit, it was worth the price of the ticket alone. And yes, I implore you, go see this band at your nearest convenience.
Same time next year at Peter, then, yeah?
Same time, same pier.
Well.
Yeah.
We were about to talk about the death of Glen Campbell.
Yeah, but we had to go to a cheerier place. Kind of.
But now let's go there.
Let's go there. Sad news this week. Obviously, Glen Campbell, country megastar, really. Revered kind of singer. Passed away at the age of 81. This is 6 years after he kind of publicly revealed that he was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, and he was obviously progressively getting worse. So, you know, it's a tough thing to say, but in this kind of situation, it seems like it was probably a release for him. Mm. I mean, just such an influential guy who's kind of, you know, really peaked in the 60s in terms of popularity. But even prior to that, he had a kind of big impact on a lot of the kind of American rock stars of the 60s and 70s and kind of cross genre borders and things like that. Wichita Lineman, one of the greatest songs of all time.
Absolute tune.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Fantastic.
I was actually only thinking about this on my way here that, you know, in the past couple of years, there's obviously been a lot of famous rock star deaths. And yeah, in the case of both Bowie and Leonard Cohen, they've kind of done this thing that they've just released albums before they've passed on. And in both cases, they're like, you know, cryptic sort of, you know I'm going to die and you guys don't know this yet.
Yeah.
Whereas Glen Campbell was kind of the opposite, that when he got Alzheimer's, he released a song that's called I'm Not Going to Miss You.
Yeah.
Which is so sad if you've ever listen to the song or seen the music video. It's, yeah, it's really, really tear-jerking stuff.
Yeah, and there was that whole documentary around his kind of final tour, which he knew was going to be his final tour, and you could see how his family were kind of trying to guide him through that. And as is often the case, you know, with people with Alzheimer's, like, music stays with them, so he would go and perform and be brilliant, and then he'd struggle to, recall family members that were around him. So it was really sad stuff. But, yeah, an immense singer, an immense talent, and, yeah, sorry to see him go.
There's been a lot of dedications on Twitter and such, but yeah, I just want to announce that he's received the greatest accolade of all, and that is that myself, my friend Oisin, and my friend Kevin rewrote Wichita Lineman into a football chant called Worcestershire Linesman, and I'm going to recite that for you now. I am the linesman for Notts County. I patrol the sideline, squinting in the sun for another early run. I put my flag up when I want to. I put my flag up all the time. And the Worcestershire linesman is calling offside. Thank you very much.
Well done. That was very...
I can't think of a more apt or beautiful tribute to
especially on this episode, because we don't have an album to review this week. So spoilers, early spoilers, ladies and gentlemen. Instead of reviewing an album this week, because quite frankly, I was not going near the fucking new Randy Newman record, because life's just too short.
It's very, very good.
Get out of the studio.
Get on that.
My God.
He's great. What do you know about Randy Newman? Let's talk about it.
He's got that really annoying voice, and he's
such a good songwriter.
I'm sure he is, but nonetheless. Hang on. Let's talk about something, Craig.
Yeah.
Because
let's go.
Friend of the show, Zara Hederman. Right?
Yes.
She said that she was going through your Spotify.
Yeah.
Your recently played artists, okay? And the vast majority of them were like, you know, Johann Sebastian Bach and all these lads. And she was like, letting everybody said that Craig is not the most cultured of the No Encore
boys. Yeah, yeah.
And I said to myself, something's up here.
Something was up, yeah. Did you ever get like a song stuck in your head, but there was no lyrics, so you had no way of like typing it out, or you'd no way of actually getting a piece of the actual music, so you could Shazam it? So it's
are you about to like fucking pitch me an app on Dragon's Den?
No, if only there was such an app. I don't know how you'd figure out the algorithms for this thing, though. So yeah, this kind of beautiful choral piece of two women singing that was definitely in some ads back in the day. I thought it was like M&S, like this is not just blah 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 thing. It's a really gorgeous thing. Got stuck in my head.
Life you live.
Got stuck in my head about 1:30 in the morning earlier this week, and I was like, I must find this. I knew it was classical, right? That's all I had to go.
It down, yeah.
So I hit Spotify and spent 2 hours going through like like the hundreds, you know. Any kind of playlist that was like, these are the classical pieces you should know. It's like, well, it's got to crop up. If I know it, it must be one of these easily recognizable things.
Did you find it?
I found it.
And?
And it's the Flower Duet. It's from the opera Lakme. And I listened to 30 seconds and I went to bed.
Unemployment treating Craig well then. Okay, so Liam Gallagher is back in the news. And as a matter of fact, before we even get to this one, I saw him today. The headline was, "Fuck the sea," says Liam Gallagher.
He's said brilliant.
I'm not going in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not into water.
Why
I suppose.
Not?
He had an incident when he was a kid, I think.
Did he?
Oh yeah, where, I don't know, he struggled in a pool or something like that.
Okay, well, he pulls no punches and takes no prisoners, according to the really badly written first line of this story. His Twitter is a veritable smorgasbord of cryptic insults. I wouldn't say they're that cryptic at all. Acerbic reflections on everyday life and profanity laden rants directed at his brother Noel and anything which gets under his skin. Now, He's been giving out about James Corden and Carpool Karaoke. My favourite comedian and show? Surely not.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably fair to say you don't agree with Leamy G on too much, Dave. But that you certainly are with him in this.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, so he was kind of asked in this GQ article, would he go on Carpool Karaoke? Everyone seems to be, you know, chomping at the bit to get on this and like sing with James Corden, who always, by the way, overpowers the singers in the car with him. Did you not notice this? It's supposed to be about the...
It is one of those things, though, that I think he does it because people will go, you know, that guy James Corden, he's actually really good.
Yeah,
really
it's what I do on this show every single week.
Very much so. Well, Liam Gallagher was asked, would he go on it? He said, no, thank you very much. No fucking chance, mate, with that fat bloke from Kevin and Perry.
Now, Craig, as you said last week, we're very progressive these days. And therefore, we think the fat shaming thing is not cool, Liam.
It isn't cool, no.
Is he in Kevin and Perry?
No, he's not. At this point, the GQ article says his partner, Debbie, said to have interjected to say it's called Gavin and Stacey and you've never watched it. Said like someone that is just sick of his antics. Gallagher concluded, I don't need to watch it to know I won't like it. James Corden is a knobhead.
He also talked about your favourite genre, grime.
Yeah, he's not really too into the grime, but he says, my kids effing love grime music. Stormzy, Skepta, he seems pretty mad. I like him. They also like that bloke, WhatsApp Ricky. You know, the American geezer, stylish, funny, gold teeth. He was talking about ASAP Rocky.
Is he kind of doing a racism here? Can we get one racism charges? Like, is that
for
possible?
What, exactly? WhatsApp Ricky is just...
Just feels like it's a little bit like, you know... I'm trying to start something here, Craig.
American geezer? No, I don't think you can do him on that, really. Okay, you can do him on a lot of other charges, but...
True enough.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I don't get it. I don't get the Liam Gallagher reverie. We've talked about it before on the show. You know, you're kind of like, you know, you want him around, don't you?
I do like him around, yeah. He says kind of bizarrely kind of... he says such strange things that no one else says. Like kind of cosmic, almost vaguely cosmic sounding. Like you kind of like he knows something about the universe.
Tappy, I feel like you were going to go down that kind of bad boy indie rock route, and then you saw that he was doing. You thought I better do something else.
It's been done. Yeah. There's no point. So I went down the good boy indie rock route.
The good boy indie rock route. Yeah, I like it. Me.
Clean cut.
Very clean. Speaking of clean music and something that really annoyed me this summer, Baby Driver, the film Baby Driver. Seeing as problem at movies on the show. Not a fan. Everyone seems to love it. I thought it was trash. The more I think about it, the more I think it's genuinely hateful. And it's getting fucking sued. So yeah, good enough for you lads.
Yeah, lawsuit's been brought against Sony. It's alleging that the studio unlawfully used the T-Rex song Deborah in the music-centric action movie Baby Driver. This is the thing, I haven't seen it now, but it's what puts me off is that the music is so kind of central to it and it seems quite gimmicky and quite like, aren't we great, being a bit ironic.
Tons of that, just, and not only that, but like his whole gimmick is that like he has earphones in all the time to deal with his
tinnitus.
Yeah. One or the other. And he's got a collection of iPods dating back to the very first ones, et cetera, et cetera. You know, has his playlist, has his tunes, everything for every occasion. And he wears the fucking terrible iPod earphones that you get when you buy an iPod.
Yeah. If you're suffering that bad,
he's a criminal getting money. Yeah. Buy a pair of fucking over-ears or something, no?
He has to drive, though, you know?
So what, you need like the worst possible earphones available?
You need to be able
to
hear
right, Apple earphones, I'm coming for you. They're terrible.
What kind of songs feature that have been cleared, unlike this T-Rex song?
Deborah by Beck.
Yeah.
I don't remember because I was really bored and I just thought it was like really obnoxious.
Is there even one kind of scene where you're like, that's a clever use of this? Or is it just so constant that there's none of those moments?
No, it's not bad. I felt the soundtrack should have been better. But like Edgar Wright, I mean, he's known for his kinetic style. It's all that kind of stuff. But it's a very, very proud of itself movie with no real characters. And
it's kind of being done with the Guardians of the Galaxy like cassette player thing.
They do it better.
It?
Yeah. They do it better, to be fair. And I mean, like, you know, even with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which came out this year, I was like, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, whatever. But I actually thought it was really good. Songs are very good too.
Do the Guardians of the Galaxy films do the whole movement synced up to the music like they do in Baby Driver? That was my least favourite thing about it. I thought it was
a little bit.
Was
yeah,
okay.
Kind of. I mean, like the opening sequence is like ELO, Mr. Blue Sky, while there's a fight going on. But you're following like the kind of Baby Groot thing. Well, you know, it's I guess a way to save on budget and have a good opening credit sequence.
Okay.
But they do it better. It actually works. Baby Driver just felt like, you know, we're fucking cool, aren't we?
Yeah.
And they're not.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of ingredients from other films that worked really well and just like this mash of stuff. I don't know. In other film news, the comedic genius predominantly known for B-movie, Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld, if you're Pat Kenny.
Yeah. Is now hugging people, Dave.
I hope to get one.
Would you
hug him?
Oh, I'd love to hug Jerry, yeah. Like, he wouldn't enjoy it, actually, so I probably wouldn't love it.
Yeah.
We talked about his, you know, famous kind of rejection of a hug from Kesha. Recently enough, where she just kind of came up to him when he was on a red carpet being interviewed and basically said, you know, I love you so much, hug. And he was like, no, thank you, politely declined. She said kind of afterwards, I've seen that kind of Seinfeld episode, I should have known. Maybe you should stop hugging people. Oh, no, it's great, I'm going to continue to be a hugger. But he's now uploaded a photo of himself in front of a mural of that very incident, and it shows a comedian hugging his manager, which is a nice gag there from the gag monster.
So still no hug for Kesha?
No.
Okay, maybe he'll buy her a new album when it comes out. Next week! Or is it tomorrow?
Plug for Kesha.
Is it today? I think it's out now.
Okay. Tell me in all good record stores.
And streaming services, Craig.
Excellent.
Record stores are a thing of the past.
Excellent.
But a thing of the present is, of course, our glorious Songs of the Week. Now, a bumper Songs of the Week this week because, again, no album. And I figure we can kind of settle this one into two sections, I suppose.
Yeah, very much so.
What section do you want to do first?
Will we start with the thing that will leave an awful taste in our mouth?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
You've named this...
Fish in a Barrel Corner.
And why is that?
Because, here's picture this.
She lived at 95, the year that I came alive, and I see her every night. She's mine, yeah, she's mine. I ran down to the square and I held back her hair. She threw up everywhere, but she is mine, yeah, she is mine. Oh.
That's 95 by Picture This. Ingenious lyrics there where a girl living at number 95, and it reminds him of being
the year
born.
He was alive
because he's only 21.
Holding back her hair while she gets sick. My girl.
That's where it fell apart for me.
It fell apart for a lot of people, I would say.
Let's talk about this.
Well, my friends, picture this. You know, if you've heard the podcast recently or followed my Twitter, you'll know that I vowed to not talk about them anymore.
Beautiful, no.
But on my own podcast, when a song like this drops into my lap, you gotta talk about it. Now, I will say this: it's better than the next song we're going to talk about. But that doesn't mean it's good, because it isn't good. It's terrible. And I'm not going to, you know, just state the obvious any further, because there's no point. But I'm just baffled. I'm baffled. This is like walking into a pub and walking out immediately when some fucking 12-year-old in the corner is trying to do their first song. And this is supposed to be, like, you know, the big single to, you know, tease the album for this band that are already stratospheric somehow in a weird way. And it's just a bit fucking bizarre. Like, what?
I mean, lyrically, it was dreadful in the verse, but I was like, well, okay, this is an okay melody. But then the chorus, he starts, like, he kind of rips off Danny O'Reilly.
Because they're friends,
vocally.
Man.
Oh.
They're
the new... stuff very, where you can't quite figure out where he's from. And it's like, oi, 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 oi.
95!
Yeah, yeah. He likes very
to,
like that.
He likes to mess with the vowels, all right.
Yeah.
Have you ever been guilty of that?
Never.
No?
Never.
You've been a perfectionist from day one.
I sound exactly like I do now, but with melody.
I mean, you're allowed to do that. I mean, Bowie famously liked to kind of contort his stuff. I mean,
some people can really sound completely Bowie different when they sing that. I've no problem with that, but it doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel real. These songs don't feel like they're about anything. And maybe someone was like, hey, maybe you should write a song about a special girl. So he talked about her throwing up.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't mention, like, a, you know, having a moment looking into a Supermax snack box or something. Like, it's very that
you'd
kind
have
of
to
song.
Clear that with the branding, though.
Probably. They'd be on board.
Is that romantic, though, holding your girlfriend's hair back?
I feel like it's a cliche of, like, Eve, oh, what a nice guy, head, isn't it? There's that in a lot of terrible TV shows. Where
from the
90s, like,
appropriately.
Wasn't he a lovely guy? He held my hair. I don't know.
I don't
it's a bit gross.
It. It's gross. It's imagery that we don't want. But then again, you know, it's provocative enough, I suppose, so fair play to them. It's trash. They suck. This band are fucking dreadful. Like, dreadful. Like,
nope.
Like, so bad that it's just... I can't get over it.
All right. Now for something completely different. Key West. So I promise not to love you, and I vow to let you go. This is my love letter telling you you're just a home. And I swear I'll never speak your name, cause you don't exist. This is just my love song telling you you're such a bitch. But it's okay, it's okay, because I never loved you anyway.
Friends, your lies were plain to see.
That was I Never Loved You Anyway, which sounds very much like Of Monsters and Men, I found. Now, this was less objectionable for me because I think it sounded more generic and there was no Danny O'Reilly impersonation, so I could kind of just tune it out a bit. But you thought it was even worse somehow.
Well, it's borderline misogynistic is what it is. I mean, like, if you look at the way that they even previewed this on their Facebook page when they posted about it, they put up, like, for anyone who's been cheated on, because it was in blocks, lied to,
yeah,
and screwed over, this one's for you. I never loved you anyway. And the video is about, like, some kind of weird, I don't know, it looks like there's some kind of domestic violence thing or something going on. But the lyrics, holy shit, the lyrics. This is my love song to you about how you're a bitch or something.
Bitch?
And, like,
yeah,
calls her a hoe. And no Irish white guy with a fucking acoustic guitar should be, like, using the word hoe and trying to, like, filter it Corona style as well.
Mm.
Do you reckon this may be an attempt at, like, dangling the carrot in front of potential remixes, being giving them the opportunity to use that one line? What is the line about the hoe line, which I did have to listen back to it a million times to make sure I was hearing
correctly.
I found
myself just getting increasingly upset by it. It's basically about, you know, he says, you know, you can go off with your 10 men or something.
Mm.
This is very...
That's horrible, yeah.
But
it's like
matter.
Something you'd say, like, some 1930s going.
Yeah,
to...
it's really fucking, like, it's such a bizarrely, like, out of... It's tone deaf. Like, it's out of step with how we're supposed to be kind of moving forward. And I guess the singer got his heart broken. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter, because he never loved her anyway, so...
Do you know what? I think he doth protest too much. Mm. I think he cared.
You reckon?
Yeah.
That's my hot take.
Are you calling them a liar?
Do you think he got hurt, do you?
I think so, man.
Okay, well, it's no this summer, but, you know, it's horrendous. And, I mean, again, we're shooting fish in a barrel here, but, again, I'm bemused. I'm particularly bemused for, like, their fans. I saw people in the comments, girls, being like, so glad you finally released this one. I love it at your live shows. Really? You love this fucking shaming, nasty, bitter, entitled, kind of misogynistic song, do you?
Just keeping it real, mate.
Why?
I don't know. Let's do songs of the week.
Okay. All right, we had to get that out of our system because we spent the fucking week listening to it.
Yeah.
Okay, up first, Craig.
Will we do numbers?
Yeah, why not?
All right. I'm
very tired this episode, sorry. It's probably coming across.
Well, do you just give me a number and I'll...
4.
This is Cassie featuring G-Eazy. Love a Loser.
Your beloved Cassie. She's back.
Yeah, she's back. Unfortunately, I got a side order of G-Eazy. I mean, I like what she does on this. I like the kind of alliteration and the kind of syllabically, you know, satisfying thing on the chorus. She's got a great voice because she has that kind of... She's very alluring but also evasive. She kind of seems... She's never quite bothered about what she's singing about, which I like. She's got this kind of liquid thing about her. Why is G-Eazy on this?
It sounded like it was too slow for him and he kind of wanted the beat to pick up in order to fit in those.
And he just keeps talking
words.
And mumbling when he's done. I'm just like, get off this track, mate. I don't know. He just completely... He's ripped Drake's style as well, hasn't he?
I've never heard him before, but I guess he's a big deal.
He seems to crop up on other people's
songs.
He
was on a Britney Spears song a while ago, I believe. And I think he's got an album, maybe, but he's definitely a big major label guy that they're wheeling out for features.
He's
just feels very cynical.
He's been one of those rappers that you see a lot of kind of online.
He's a
lot of. Oh, yeah.
This isn't rap.
Well, it's.
He comes up and he croons.
He's a crooner.
I don't know, but I've seen a lot of stuff online where kind of the African American community are saying he's just another white dude that's kind of co-opting our style and not being very talented with it, but somehow getting ahead because he's just a good-looking white boy.
That'll happen.
Yeah, that will happen. So that was a bit disappointing, but the production was kind of alright. I mean, center stage was Cassie's voice. She just doesn't seem that bothered releasing stuff.
Which
I mean,
it's a shame because she's really, really good. And yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, cool, there's a new Cassie song. Oh, okay, it sounds like she did in 5 minutes.
It'll be another 3 years before we hear anything.
Yeah. She's the Jai Paul of whatever her own kind of signature stamp is. What do you think, Dave?
I liked it. I'm not really that into this sort of music, but I did get a feeling about who she is. I think she seems like a cool person.
Yeah.
I don't have very much to say about it because I don't know anything about this type of music.
But is it easier to love a loser than lose a lover? In your experience?
Yes, it is definitely. Definitely.
100%. I don't think I understood the question.
Moving on to Jessie Ware and Midnight. Can you meet me? This song I found very boring. I found the song very try hard. I think she's normally quite good, but this seems like, let's just try everything. And it's too anthemic. It's a bit Florence, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a bit of wailing. Although I enjoyed her kind of stretching range. I thought that kind of added a bit of emotional heft to proceedings.
I kind of prefer Jessie Ware when she's almost doing the Cassie thing, when she sounds not bothered, because she makes it sound quite artful. This sounded a little bit like they wanted it to be on an ad.
Yeah, I loved the first album, Devotion. I didn't really spend much time with Tough Love, I believe, but by all accounts, it was, you know, more of the same in a good way. But there's always a kind of suspicion with her that it's just stuff that maybe Mariah Carey did in the 90s. But it's kind of like cheesy stuff from the 90s that is now kind of being dressed up as maybe a bit standoffish, so kind of slightly cooler. But it's actually not that far removed from just kind of, I don't know, pop music that we shouldn't be indulging in. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. No, this, again, I don't know Jessie Ware. I haven't heard her stuff previous to this. And this is the sort of stuff I feel very uneducated to even talk about. So it was just one of the songs I listened to maybe once or twice and
threw it away. I mean, to be fair, it doesn't really grab you. I mean, I expected a lot more from this, and to the point when I was like, we should probably not do this song. But then again, you know, commitment goes.
Well, there is a bit of a switch up. Like, the chorus kind of goes a bit weird. Benny and the Jets stomp.
Like, that's why I don't like it.
Yeah, it doesn't really work.
It gets rhythmic. Yeah. It didn't need it. Yeah. She's much better when she keeps it really fucking simple. Nonetheless, back this week is an artist who I believe... Craig.
Are we abandoning the numbers? Yeah.
Do we abandon the numbers? We did. Sorry, I'm very tired.
You feel very done with this podcast.
I'm not done with the podcast in general. I'm just done with the podcast. I'm very tired.
There'll be some football songs coming up.
I got 2 hours sleep. I got 2 hours sleep the night before this, and then I got a good night's sleep last night.
All right.
And now I feel like an old man. Okay, I feel very tired. I'm sorry. Cullum is going to be ripping his headphones at it. Like, oh yeah, sorry. Why is Cullum? Cullum isn't here because he went to like a family.
He's gone to Cork.
Yeah. He fucked off to Cork.
Cork was calling. Yeah. So he's
if Cullum can't be bothered with the podcast this week, then why should we? Destroyer is the
number
act.
Number three, please, Dave.
Destroyer is the act. The name of the song is Sky is Grey, and it sounds like this.
Should have seen it coming. Should have taken care. Tried pretending that anything was there.
So that's Destroyer. Craig, who the hell is Destroyer? You've talked about him before, not on the podcast though.
Destroyer is a dude that's a Canadian chap that has been trying on various different kind of musical styles for about 20 years. Somewhat ironically some of the time, but has really kind of found his niche mining a lot of very cool 80s type stuff. Probably came to, you know, a lot of people's attention with Kaput, which was about 6 years ago now. He's had an album since a couple of years ago, which I didn't get into. Was it really? Okay,
yeah.
So that's one I've missed. Poison Season. Okay, I'm going to have to check that out. But he's back and as good as ever. Like, I really like his stuff.
Yeah, I loved it.
He's got that weird vocal style.
He does. He sings usually. You know, people try to put on an American accent when they sing, but he's Canadian, isn't he? Putting on this kind of grandiose English accent whenever he sings, and everything sounds very, you know, beautiful, even if he's saying the bride's just pissed herself or whatever the line is in the song.
Yeah, it's very arch, like he can pull that off really well, kind of like a Sparks type thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I'd say he's a big Bowie fan. That definitely comes out in Poison Season, the songs that directly resemble some of Bowie's earlier stuff. And yeah, he wears it on his sleeve from time to time, but still has this kind of, his band are incredible as well. I guess they are Destroyer. He is Destroyer, I'm not sure. But he is one of the greatest live drummers I've ever seen, who produced and mixed this record, as far as I know. The album is called Ken, which should be coming out in October. He's got a trumpet player and a saxophone player who play off each other like best friends. They just like constantly sound like they have such a great time when they play, and he stands at the front of us like the angel of death, doesn't care, sunglasses on his face even when he's in a studio doing a session. But he's a funny guy. Yeah, I search out interviews of him. Dan Behar is his name, and it's like pulling blood from a stone.
Yeah. I believe that Kane album, like the title itself, was taken from a kind of discarded title for the Suede song The Wild Ones, which mm-hmm. he's big into, and he's talked about this new album being influenced by Suede and like the last years of Thatcher and stuff like that. So he's like a big Anglophile, but he makes it work.
I don't know if he does.
Really? You're not a fan?
No, I think his voice is irritating. And
it's Marmot, yeah.
Plus, also, I have to remember it now. It just jogged my memory. In 2009, right, he had a project with Spencer Krug, I think, of Wolf Parade, and it was called Swan Lake.
Yeah, Swan Lake.
They've got a song called Spider. It might be the single worst song ever made by anybody ever.
He has some definite skippers.
It is, like, arrestably bad. He should have been in prison for that song. It's appalling. And that's where I kind of remember the voice from. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
On a scale of 1 to 95, what would you give it?
Oof, the year that guy came alive. You say, on a scale of 1 to 95, it's a solid 52.
Right. So but, it's half as good as Picture This.
Sure.
Wow.
Well, Picture This, they operate under their own level, man.
That's true.
Kaput is a great song. This mm-hmm. one just didn't really hold my attention, and I felt like it was too scattershot and too much going on, and then I'm after remembering that song Spider, and now I just feel quite sad. Can we talk about The National, please?
Yeah, we can. Number two, you say, Dave? This is Karen at the liquor store.
I wasn't a catch, I wasn't a keeper, I was walking around like I was the one who found dead John Cheever. Hand in glove. So blame it on me, I really don't care. It's a foregone conclusion. I see you in stations and on invitations. You'd fall into rivers with friends on the weekend.
Corinne at the liquor store, I believe, is how he pronounces it.
Well, it is his wife, so he probably knows.
Is it his wife?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe so. But yeah, this is kind of a bit more familiar, considering the last two cuts we've seen heard off the upcoming album have been, you know, a bit sonically different. And I mean, kind of effects-laden guitar solo aside, this is your kind of traditional, wistful,
powerful
national
chorus,
piano national thing, yeah.
You could even say bog-standard national song. It's fine. It's fine, but it's a bit of a letdown after we've heard up until now off the new record. And I guess they need to kind of have that. They need to kind of like tap back into their signature style. It's grand, like but it's every national song that you've ever heard in your life.
They're a band I feel like I have to defend a lot to people who've never been able to get into them.
Increasingly so, I would say, yeah. Considering the success and the kind of rise.
Absolutely,
of them.
Yeah. And it just seems like they're veering dangerously towards the centre of the road for me. He doesn't seem as pushed anymore. He doesn't seem to be able to emote or perform it in his voice like the way he did off, say, Alligator, Boxer. I feel quickly falling out of love with The National each attempt.
Well, particularly on this, they don't seem to settle into a correct like tone or something. There's something slightly off where, as it gets to the chorus, it feels like there's a lift off coming, and then it's just all slightly underwhelming.
Yeah, it's undercooked for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I kind of fell in love with The National on the last record, and the two tracks off this one kind of brought me back in a little bit, and I thought their performance at Glastonbury was quite good, even if Matt Berninger was out of his mind. But you kind of expect that, possibly, sometimes. Yeah, this just feels phoned in. It feels like someone gave him National lyrics to sing, and they're like, just do the thing that you do. And he did it, and it's fine.
I wonder if there's a little bit of a hangover from doing his own LV.
Yeah.
So maybe coming back to National camp, he doesn't want to be there.
Perhaps not.
Well, this might just be a kind of them touching base with their roots or whatever, because the other stuff we have heard is more promising and it does seem like they're a bit more engaged. So hopefully this is just, it might just kind of settle in nicely somewhere in the middle of the record.
Yeah.
You
know, number one, Craig.
The horrors are back again. Something to remember me by. It's very, very, very good.
They've gone all Human League.
Yeah.
I love it.
We're kind of like a goth hot chip on this. That's
it's great. There's a radio edit, but you know, I like the 6 minute plus version.
Yeah, Flyspot.
But they're really good at that, though. They've often been good at that, where like even like tracks like Moving Further Away and kind of I See You, like they're just very, very good at kind of keeping the, like the kind of the attention and the pace and the rhythm going. I'm so hyped for this record. I think it's going to be fucking great. They're just such an essential band for me, and I don't think they're ever going to kind of get out of their level. They're never going to break their own particular glass ceiling. But like, yeah, this was tremendous. I think Faris is really underrated. I think he's a lot more kind of flexible than a lot of people give him credit for.
His voice seems to be getting better as well and more versatile, I think.
Yeah,
it's
effects laden on this one for sure.
Yeah, of course. And they are, I mean, seen them live and they were good, but they really do know how to use that studio well. But their songwriting, like the last couple of songs we've heard, it's very strong. It seems like every album they're getting better at just the kind of nuts and bolts thing of like the meat of the song. Because when Primary Colors came around and they just left that whole, you know, schlocky B-movie horror kind of garage rock thing behind, it was, you know, it was great. They moved on to kind of slightly cooler influences, but it sounded like they were just being like, oh, we've got some cool influences. The last three records now, they sound like their own band and getting more comfortable with that. So yeah, it's fantastic.
I think they're a very stylish band. Mm. I think in terms of what they do in the studio is definitely very on the nose, where the influence is on the sleeve. This song, I like this song. However, I do feel it's like Destroyer's Kaput Junior. I don't think they do it as well. I think his voice is actually, I think it misses the point altogether. I don't think he sounds apt, or I don't know if that's the correct word, but he just doesn't seem to be able to do that sort of yacht rocky, Human League cocaine sort of music.
Are you saying he needs to do more cocaine?
I think
on a yacht.
I think this guy needs to do just a little bit more cocaine, and then we'll have something to remember him by. But yeah, for me, it's
very well done.
Thank you very much. I think it's good. I like how they have changed their colours so many times. They did the whole we listened to My Bloody Valentine thing, releasing an album called Skying. Then, you know, previously I wasn't a big fan of the sort of, like you say, the vampire Transylvanian indie pop or whatever you want to call it that they were doing. But at least they were doing something. At least they had a dartboard to aim for, and it was a little bit different. But this, it kind of doesn't do it for me, but it's I somewhat admire what they're trying with it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're a podcast all about different things.
Mm.
And at the start of the new...
Hear.
I feel like one thing that unites us all, though, as gentlemen of the road, you might say, is...
What?
Football, mate!
Gentlemen of the road?
I was doing a thing. Okay. It didn't work. I'm very tired. So, here's how it's going to work. We're going to take a listen to the Match of the Day theme tune right now.
Yeah, so to explain what we did, essentially, we voted on our top five best football songs and our top five or bottom five worst football songs. Again, totted them all up, so as I did, assigned them points, and then there was some ties, and it got very complicated. And around Wednesday, Dave was like, "Why are you taking this so seriously?" And I was like, "I don't know, man.
I'm unemployed." Hang on a second. When you say a football song, what does that constitute, Rick?
Yeah, this is a very good question.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm glad I asked it as well.
So it can be a song that has football at its heart, as its theme, or it can be a song with someone from football involved in it.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, so parameters. So we had a wide scope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Eve looks really upset.
There was a vote for Elvis's A Little Less Conversation because it was in that Nike ad round. What World Cup was it?
2002?
Yeah. Okay. But unfortunately...
Craig disqualified it.
I disqualified it.
I just think of that song. You know, what do you think of? You the guys in the cage.
I'm not
first goal wins.
I think of Ocean's 11.
You would think of Ocean's 11.
Yeah. All right. Let's go with the worst football songs of all time first, will we?
Yep.
All right.
Own goal, mate, as I've headed it.
Very good, very good.
At number five.
At number five, it's the supergroup England United featuring the Spice Girls, Ocean Colour Scene, Space, and Echo and the Bunny Men doing parentheses, how does it feel to be, close parentheses, on top of the world? So how does it feel?
Where do you start?
What an absolute banger.
The year was 1998, and this was like the third England song that was the official one that no one talked about because it was crap.
Height of the Spice Girls' power, what could have possibly gone wrong? Space. They were there as well. Ocean Colour Scene. How are Embrace not involved here? That's what I want to know.
I just want to tell you, at the time, Chris Evans said, it is a good pop song, but you can't sing it on the terraces. You can't really get your teeth into the lyrics, which
he's
is
got
fair
a point.
Criticism.
He's got a huge got fucking a point. Yeah. I mean, like it's got to be, you know, like it's like a wrestling show, you know.
Sure.
I mean, it was predominantly written, I think, by Echo and the Bunnymen, who'd just come back with something of a, like, you know, back from the dead, top 10 UK hit with Nothing Lasts Forever. So this feels like a really kind of like by numbers, by committee song where it was like, okay, we'll get the Spice Girls just to sing a bit because they're, as Dave says, the biggest thing on the planet. But we need some like indie cred because it's Britpop and shit. So we'll get Ocean Colour Scene and Echo and the Bunnymen. Yep.
They still have careers.
Yeah.
I love, there's one particular line or maybe a sentiment running through the entire song, which is that, you know, these sort of things are supposed to rile the fans up, get the fans believing. And all they can muster is, it's looking like it's going to happen, is the lyric, rather than it's going to happen, we're going to be on top of the world. It's like, it looks like we're going to be on top of the world, guys.
That's kind of a characteristic of a lot of English football songs, as we'll see later on these two lists.
So how did England's dreams end in
1998? I was going to say, it's looking like we're going to get knocked out in the second round when David Beckham gets sent off against Argentina and then we turn him into a national hate figure and burn effigies of him.
For felling Diego Simeone.
Diego Simeone, that's right.
The lovable rogue.
Current Atletico Madrid manager, they lost on penalties. If I recall correctly, David Batty and maybe Paul Ince missed a penalty.
David Batty particularly missed, I think, important one.
High-class entertainment in the Hanratty household that evening, I'll tell you.
But in great news for England, it kind of announced Michael Owen on the world stage and he didn't let it go to his head at all.
No, he did not. He's back in the news.
Speaking of films.
Reviewing films. Yeah. He thought Heat was rubbish, but preferred Ghost.
Let's do number four. It's Heavy D and Sonny Green. Nope, me neither. Gooners and We're Gunning. All the gooners run the sound. Boom, on the tune I found. Big Heavy D, no bank, what wow. Big Melody got them skanking around. Boom, and the crowd make noise. Backing a man of them Arsenal boys. Come with a bang and that's Arsenal ways. Red Army with the Arsenal ways. It's in our heart, no, we don't have a choice. Not tear us apart, us Arsenal ways. We are the best, all the rest are worse. Gooners and We're Gunning. Arsenal are coming. Now, Heavy D was on Celebrity Big Brother. I recognise him from the video, absolutely. Yeah.
How did he become a celebrity? Because of the phenomenon that is Arsenal
Storage
fan.
Wars. Oh, yeah, sorry. Arsenal fan.
Storage Wars. Arsenal fan TV.
Yeah.
Now, Tapley.
Yes.
As the resident Arsenal aficionado.
I also loved that season of Celebrity Big Brother, I'll have you know.
Didn't see it.
It was incredible.
Tell us about Heavy D.
Was in the house.
Stephen Bear from Just the Tattoo of Us, I believe, and Love Island and all these sorts of things. He won. You don't know Stephen Bear? Stephen Bear?
I don't.
No, news.
Stephen Bear? Okay.
It was pretty low rent. It was on Channel 4, but that move to Channel 5 really killed it, didn't it?
Who else was on it? There was Renee Graziano, who has... she was one of the mob wives on the television show Mob Wives. she had, I have to admit, has so many phrases that have entered my lexicon from watching her incredible performance on Celebrity Big Brother. Which I'm not going to go into now because most of them are not even podcast suitable.
Can we get one of the phrases?
Well, okay. She saw a guy whose name is Lewis Bloor from The Only Way is Essex or one of those sort of shows running naked in the backyard. He was pretty drunk, you know, had a couple of those Celebrity Big Brother beers. And someone came into the sitting room and said, oh my God, Lewis is running naked in the back garden. Now, Lewis is a very handsome man. And all the girls ran to the front to see. And Renee stood back and she said, did you see his penis? And then when someone said, yeah, she said, was it pink? Like an Irishman? So we now colloquially refer to Irishmen as pink dicks.
Ah.
Yeah. So that's
a lovely turn.
That's why I greeted you today as, hello, my pink dick friends. You didn't, you didn't bat an eyelid.
Now I get it. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Heavy D, though.
He says boom a lot. That was his
thing. He's one of these, you know, queues up outside the stadium to talk to Arsenal Fan TV about how terrible Arsenal are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and how it's the end of the world. And here he is.
We're fucked, fam.
This lending, needed more troops, I think.
Is lending
wouldn't
colour,
be on board if it had troops.
Lending colour to a horrendous song. Arsenal are particularly bad with the old songs. Their fans are, by and large, awful human beings. And the thing is, this song is, it's just, it's horrendous. It's so horrendous. It's not good. You can't defend it, can you?
My first piece of writing in my notes here is, this is my favourite song ever.
Yeah.
I also like the line.
It was after a bottle of Beck's, was it?
Yeah, this was after a bottle of sweet Beck's. My favourite lyric in the entire song is, Arsene Wenger, shut it down. Sorry, no. I didn't even realise the note I made. The reason I wrote this down is because what he says is, Arsene Wenger,
oh, they
shut
all
it down.
Say Wenger.
They all
yeah,
say Wenger.
They can't pronounce Wenger. My favourite line is, like, we're on top of the league, top of the league. It's just like, what? Yeah, in November. <It's>
like, for one match, because yeah. United have a match in hand. Yeah.
Really rolls off the tongue.
The top comment... on the YouTube video that I watched today was, this is why other clubs hate us. And I have to tend to agree, it was fairly embarrassing.
Well, okay, number three. In the 1980s, Liverpool were an absolute footballing juggernaut, and then the Anfield rap happened.
Full FC is hard as hell, United, Tottenham, Arsenal. Watch my lips, and I will spell, because they don't just play, but they can rap as well.
My idea was it to build Liverpool into a bastion of invincibility, you know, like.
All right, someone's listening to the Beastie Boys, I think. Where to start with this?
So wait, are you putting the Anfield rap as like the death knell for this club's successes?
This was the soundtrack to them losing 1-0 to Wimbledon in the FA Cup final. They did a song for just getting to the final, not even winning it.
Who do you support, Craig?
Manchester United.
Okay, so
up. Absolutely. And United have had some bad songs of their time. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
But this is particularly bad.
I think this is like the most famous bad football song.
I know you were saying when we were doing this, you kind of wanted to avoid some of the obvious ones, but it felt like, well, how can we not talk about it? Like, I mean, we all put it in there because it was like, well, look, it is categorically awful.
It's pretty bad. And it's been immortalized by the Anfield Rap podcast, Rap with a W.
That's right.
Which very is clever, also clever. Terrible and poisonous.
When like the whole basis of this song is like just talking about the Scouse accent and being like, why don't the other players on the team that are from not from Liverpool have Scouse accents? And like, it's just a comedy Scouse rap. How could it be good? How could it be good?
It's not good.
No.
Let's have a better song. Oh, hang on, we can't because we're stuck in hell now. We're in serious purgatory right now as we go to
purgatory is Newcastle. Number two, Paul Gascoigne's Fogging the Town.
Sickly sausage road in a dirty old town on the back of the time, setting my sights on gold. It's plain to see it's black and white, this Geordie boy.
I find this the song makes me feel ill.
Yeah.
So it's actually a cover song, right?
It is. The refrain is Lindisfarne, I think. It's a kind of a folky thing. The opening lyrics is what gets me the whole time. It's just like
in a chip.
Snack shop, eating sickly sausage rolls.
Mm.
Sickly sausage rolls.
It's just upsetting.
Yeah.
We're not going to, it's just tough. I mean, Paul Gascoigne, God love him, he went for it.
Yeah.
He really did. You can't deny it.
He goes by Gazza for this release as well, his pseudonym.
Yeah. He was on top of the world in 1990.
He was on top of the pops.
Was he on top of the pops? Did this chart that high?
I recall seeing him, like, kind of, you know, caterwauling around the studio for sure, yeah?
He is really going for it, and there'll be another song we talk about where he was also kind of involved in going for it, but just before the refrain, he says sing every time he gets to it, right? But he says it in a really, like, he just goes, sing. Like, it's just like, my bit's done, sing. Which is kind of great. Okay, number one, how could you get much worse?
This is...
It's much more recent.
This is sensational.
It's Reading FC and we are the Royals.
What, is she like married to the chairman or something? To someone? Is that true? That's a rumor, right?
What?
The singer. How the fuck did this happen?
Is it not like the chairman? Like she wrote the lyrics for it or something? Or she did some? I don't know.
I mean, this is a really bad Eurovision song for Reading.
Yeah,
the most boring football clubs in the world. What the fuck? And the rap.
The rap comes out of nowhere.
Jeez.
You're already like, this is bizarre. But yeah.
I guess that chorus, man, I'm lolling. Someone sent me this on Twitter, right? Because I put out the call, and fucking hell, my speakers disconnected when the rap started.
But can you not sing it in the stands? You know what I mean?
Go on, give us a go there.
I'm not even going to attempt to do it, but because I don't support Reading.
They call us the Royals.
Lyrics are actually quite, you know, there's a lot of bloodlust there, and it gets quite like warlike.
Yeah, it does. Again,
especially because it's Reading.
Yeah, to remind us all, it's Reading.
With our might, we'll defend the glory of Reading. This is great. And they keep talking about rising to the challenge. Like, it gets very Eye of the Tiger at times, but it still has this kind of very, you know, family friendly pop sheen to it.
Every now and then over the years, I will come up with a headline that I want to see on the back of a tabloid, a football pun headline, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm always disgusted when no one ever takes my ideas that I put out there into the air. Years ago, Liverpool were knocked out of the FA Cup, I believe, by Reading.
Yes.
In one of the early rounds. And I thought that the headline should have been, Liverpool fail, Reading comprehension.
Oh.
Never happened.
I like it.
Thanks, appreciate
it. Some of my favourite lines, I'm just going to read out because I have them down. Getting ready to shed our sweat. Which is just a great line.
Gross.
Taking a shower, I think that means.
Our blood is blue. Our wings are white.
Means they're dead, and
that's great.
Going to heaven,
yeah.
The worst.
They're terrible.
It's officially the worst.
The song upset me,
but at least Reading now finally top some sort of table and come in at number one in the own goal mate top five worst football songs as voted for by Craig.
Fantastic. How about It's a Screamer, the top five best? Where do we start, man?
Do you want to take this one?
I will. I'll take this one because this is a strange one. Popular German artist Xavier Naidoo.
Thank you.
Had a song in 2006 for the 2006 German World Cup team, and appropriately enough, it's called Danke.
Bastian Schweinsteiger, selbst wenn er fällt, spielt er den Ball weiter. Wer soll dich stoppen? Jetzt geht's erst los. Übernimm das Spiel und stell den Gegner bloß. And yo, we can't forget Per Mertesacker. Du machtest manchen Stürmer zum Kofferpacker. Hast den Job erledigt und dich so verewigt. Manch ein Gegner denkt bestimmt, dieser Mother Christoph Metzel.
Now, this song, couldn't tell you what you're saying, mate, but I love how he says it. It's a 7-minute piano ballad. It's wistful, it's melancholic, it's heartfelt, it's triumphant. And at one point, I guess because how else was he going to make it work, he just switches to English and says, and yo, we can't forget Per Mertesacker.
Yeah.
You can't. You
it's
really
great.
Can't.
He's stringing those names in. I don't know how well he's doing because I don't speak German, but all I know is I was moved. I was moved by the 2006 German World Cup team. They were great.
I mean, maybe the German just gives it a kind of, I don't know.
Gravitas.
Gravitas might be the word, but also the kind of, you're disconnected enough from the cheesiness to be like, oh, just let it kind of wash over you. There's something quietly...
He goes with the way he wraps his
dignified about it.
Yeah, the way he wraps his vocals around, like, Mikhail Balak. Mm. Like he makes that sound onomatopoeic.
Yeah.
This is poetry, my friends.
Are we sure that this wasn't supposed to be in the own goal?
As we progress through this list, I mean, there were times during the week, as I was talking about a point, I was just like, which list am I looking at now? All these titles look... okay.
Well, you know, no better way to indicate that than our number four, which, again...
Hold on.
I can't believe that this is even a thing. But you're very married to this.
I love this song. This is Kevin Keegan's Head Over Heels in Love. Make me think how it used to be. And it looks like I'm falling off. I actually really like this song. I mean, right, Kevin Keegan can't sing. Let's just get that elephant out of the room here. He can sing. His voice is really weak, but I kind of like that a bit. It's really something so pathetic about it that makes me so sad. And because Kevin Keegan is a bit of a pathetic figure anyway, I just loved the attempt at Gilbert O'Sullivan with a George Harrison guitar solo in the middle of it. It was really, really moved me. But
he's on a league of their own and they're laughing at him.
Yeah.
The sad old man.
Yeah.
But at the time he did it, he was on top of the world.
That's true.
I mean, he was playing his trade in Germany and winning kind of European Footballer of the Year. I think he won two of them, didn't he? He was like considered one of the best players in the world. So he decided, I'll have a pop career. That's what I'll do now. And what I like about it, yeah, this is kind of quite sweet. And like it's kind of quite catchy. And it's, you know, he's falling in love again with his beloved wife.
That's
of now
one of the
going
things.
On 45 years.
It's not a frequent topic for for a pop song or a love song. And the opening line of it, I think it's the opening couplet, is, "You make me a stranger, that's what time can do." That's a brilliant lyric, like, honestly. But I love thinking of Kevin Keegan sitting there with a pen and paper. I assume he didn't write this,
no.
But I love thinking of him musing over a piece of paper with his guitar, like Natasha Bedingfield, just trying to write the classic.
This charted at, like, number 31 in England, right? Or in
Not
the UK.
High enough.
Yeah, but in Germany, it got to something like number 12 or something like that. So for his next single, he decided the song should be England. Go with your German. Like, what was he thinking?
Yeah.
That was the end of his pop career.
It's a shame.
He needed a Sven Gali to guide the way. He thought he could do it alone.
He Sven Goran Eriksson.
He thought he could do it alone, like on the pitch, but he was wrong, goddammit. It's a team sport, music industry.
It is.
He saw that ABBA was one place higher than him in the end of the week's chart, and he just thought to himself, I would love it if we beat them.
Well, one place higher than him in this week's chart is the greatest song of all time. Glenn Hoddle, that's Chris Waddle, that's Diamond Lights.
Yeah. Your it's ears, not Hoddle and Waddle, it's Glenn and Chris.
Your ears do not deceive you, listener. It's a beautiful piece of music. It really kind of captures the entire 80s spirit, the style of life, the way that we would talk to each other. What pop music can really do, my friends, this one is one for the ages.
They're like Wham with Edge.
I'm not even kidding. I think this song is fucking 5 stars. I think it's incredible. It should have been number one in this list. It's number one in my heart. It's amazing.
It is very good.
Routinely slagged off on all these football countdown shows with nobody fucking comedians doing talking heads and making funny faces. They always go, oh, do you remember Glenn and Chris on Top of the Pops fucking being horrendous? And I'm like, no, that song is brilliant.
Yeah, I think it sucks. But
God damn it.
I love their determination anyway. You got to give them that. They've got determination. I read an interview with them and they said, I wouldn't be surprised if someone did a cover version of it.
Oh, who would be good to do a cover of it? Picture this. Two-piece.
Chromatics.
Chromatics would do a great job.
I'd really like this song. I also like the kind of genesis of it. Chris Waddle recalled the single coming about following an appearance two of them made for their personal sponsors, Budget Rent-A-Car. The glamour of the British football in the 80s.
I'll concede that Waddle struggles a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Hoddle, on the other hand,
in the pocket,
takes this ball and fucking boots it through the net into the next stadium where another match is being played. It goes through that net.
Sure. Yeah, very much so. And also, just a lot of kind of to talk around this was that throughout their whole career, it was a lot of Hoddle being, you know, bullish about, I'm now going to be a pop star. Like, they're talking about when they're on Top of the Pops.
Have you seen that performance?
I have.
Chris Waddle looks like it's his first day of school and he's scared.
Yeah.
Glenn Hoddle is owning that stage.
Yeah. And here's a Hoddle quote about Top of the Pops. One of the greatest things I ever did. I'm glad I did it and I learned a lot from it.
Well, he's not wrong.
I learned a lot from it.
Okay.
What do you think? Hoddle and Waddle. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Roadhouse. We present to you.
Oh, very oh, much.
The last
so.
Episode of Twin Peaks: The Return is Glenn Hoddle and Chris Waddle on that stage.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Epic television.
Wow. Okay.
Now we all know this one because it was everywhere. And for good reason.
England's gonna throw it away, gonna throw it away, but I know they can play. Cause I remember three lines on the shirt. Jewels were made, still gleaming. 30 years of hurt. Never stop me dreaming. So many jokes, so many.
So that's David Baddiel, Frank Skinner, and your man off the lightning seeds,
Ian Brody,
with three lions. Now, you might say, lads, you're Irish. You can't possibly like this song. Brits out and all that nonsense. And I say, let's all come together and be harmonious with a great chorus like this one. It holds up. I love how they, didn't they re-release it? And they changed 30 Years of Hurt to 40 Years of Hurt?
Mm. They re-release it a good few times. I think they do.
They're going to have tournaments. To keep re-releasing it.
So this is what happens when you get someone who can actually write a song, basically, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, they try and make a decent tune. You know, it's got problems. It's got the, it's very xenophobic video, particularly against the Germans.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
But overall, you got to say it works.
It does. It's also...
It's a party anthem.
It's great because they recognise how ridiculous English football fans are and how, like, the glory of 1966 is just getting further and further away. There's a real sadness to it. Like
51 years away now.
Yeah. Like, I really like Baddiel and Skinner. I remember listening to a podcast they did for the German World Cup in 2006, which is ages ago now. But, like, it concluded, obviously, with England's exit. Well, it concluded with the rest of the tournament. But prior to that, England's exit and them sitting in a taxi, like, slightly, you know, just kind of teary-eyed, being like, turn to each other and being like, are we going to see England win a major tournament in our lifetime? Yeah. I don't think we will. And that sums up this song. It's great. They still believe, though.
They do.
I enjoyed them on fantasy football. I think Frank Skinner is a dick. Dave?
I think Frank Skinner, I thought he was funny, and then once we were on tour, we didn't have an aux cable, so no one could play music on their iPhones. And the only CDs that were left in the van that was lent to us was this, like, comic relief Frank Skinner. Well, I believe he was one of the comedians who was speaking at it. delivering comedy to the masses. And it was one of the most fucked up things I've ever heard in my entire... For a charity event, it was so fucked. So Frank Skinner, yeah.
He kind of evolved into like the Jim Davidson of the modern era.
He's not far
he's
off.
Funny, and he's, no, and he's all he's like, controversial, is it? Oh, yeah, I know comedians are supposed to be controversial, but... He seems quite mean-spirited.
I don't actually watch his stand-up, but he does a radio show, which is like a afternoon kind of Sunday thing, and he's really funny on that because he tells like good anecdotes, and he seems like your kind of cool uncle because he can't go to like, I'm being risque and I'm on stage.
Listen, mate, I'm a cool uncle.
And he hosts like stuff on like the Arts Channel, and he's all... there's two sides to Frank
what
Skinner,
stuff?
And Psycho Screaming. Yeah.
I love it.
I've sang twice now. The singer has only sang once.
That's
you,
true.
And you haven't sang at all,
well,
mate.
Maybe for our number one, it's New Order, World of Motion.
Arrivederci, it's what I want.
I want you to do the John Barnes rap. Please. I can't remember the lyrics. You've got to get
no,
in
but
the
it's,
game.
It's advice for life, really, isn't it?
I was thinking about how to describe the lyrics of this song yesterday. Now, when we were talking about it, myself and David, I think this is also a complete bum note. I think this song sucks.
What?
Somehow. I actually, you know what? I even put it in my list, so I think it was just out of fear. But it reminds me of... Because obviously all of the members of New Order don't watch or know anything about football because the lyrics in it. They remind me of, do you know when you go on holidays and you see football t-shirts or like skateboarding t-shirts and the text that's on the clothes has been clearly translated from English into Spanish and then back into English. It kind of seems like Bernard Sumner is singing things like, you know, do a goal. Take it one-on-one. Find space. He tries to, like, find any phrase that can be have a double meaning, like find your space and one-on-one.
But I don't think there's any way to, even if you were, I actually think New Order are probably mad into football.
It doesn't sound like from this. They probably
but,
are.
But I just don't think there's, is there a way of getting that terminology into a kind of pop song and somehow change its meaning? To, I think this is as close as it gets.
Yeah, I'm not really saying what. The footy song by Adam and Joe, I would say maybe.
Is, yeah, but that's know. Quite, yeah. Glenn this is an absolute tune, though. Mm. Football aside, this is like New Order at the height of their powers. I mean, that chorus is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a better chorus to any song?
Any song?
Right now. Come on.
Day, but you
sing
do.
It to me. Yeah.
Diamond Lights by Glenn and Chris.
Fog on the Tyne.
95 by Picture
It's
Biz.
Brilliant. It's such a good song.
It was their last release on Factory Records, I believe, as well.
Yeah. What a way to go out. Sure. Yeah. How could you bother releasing anything else after this? That was it.
Yeah.
They're only number one.
They're only number
not
one.
Not Blue Monday.
Not True Faith?
Nope.
So hang on. Do you think it's the best New Order song? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it's not the best New Order song.
It blatantly isn't.
It's, but
it's the best
but
New Order chorus.
But it's a very good New Order song. Right. And for a football song, that shouldn't happen. It's great.
I don't know. I'm unconvinced, even though it is the top of this list, but like... You know, this is my first ever podcast here.
What do we think of the John Barnes rap?
I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
Do you think he was stitched up?
What do you mean?
No.
Sure, they were like, this doesn't work. But it's on the song.
Do you know how it went down?
Go on.
So
were you there?
It was 1990, and the English team were told, okay, we're going to be doing your song, so everyone go to the studio, yada, yada. And they were like, oh, they're always crap. So we won't go. So like six players turned up. Mm-hmm. John Barnes... Chris Waddle, obviously, yes. Because he was still clinging on to the dream. Peter Beardsley and some of those. And they were like, oh, it's New Order. Maybe this will be good. So when they got to the rap thing, they didn't actually have a rap. So someone had to, they all had to audition to rap and then write a rap.
Okay.
And John Barnes got it. And I think the rap was written by Craig Johnston of Liverpool fame. But he's like South African or Australian or
it
something. But he just happened to be there.
Who was an academy player and, press in North End.
I mean, it's dangerously close to, like, my name is John, and I'm here to say, but somehow it kind of goes with the, like, the, it's cheesy enough to be endearing. It puts a smile on your face, and I think that's what this song does.
That's a lovely sentiment, Craig. Do we think that, you know, the world of football needs to come back to this kind of shenanigans?
Yes.
Because it's kind of died out.
There was one song that I was considering putting on my list, which I didn't because... Well, to be honest, it just wasn't on Spotify and I wasn't bothered finding it on YouTube. There was a guy...
The Commitment.
I know, right? There's a guy from Cork. His name is Andy something and the Throw-Ins, or it has some sort of name like that.
Yeah.
And the song is just about Ireland going to the Euros and where everyone is in the world. And it's actually so catchy. I remember myself and my friend Ross were looking through a blog one day, an Irish blog, trying to listen exclusively to Irish music just to see what we can... if we could find anything new. And this was the one song, this Irish Euro 2016 hopeful anthem.
Yeah.
And it's such a tune. I'll tweet it. Follow me on Twitter and I'll tweet it.
Yeah, so we didn't have any Irish stuff. Like, we didn't have Put 'Em Under Pressure.
Jackie August, Paki August, Cascarino.
Yeah.
Or what was the one that came out last year? Cause we did football songs last year for the Euros. There was a terrible Manic Street Preachers one.
Come
for,
on Wales!
Come on Wales! Yeah. Then there was the Irish, the official Irish one was horrific.
Yeah, because they kind always of a trad type thing, wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah,
I can't even remember.
You're probably gonna go trad. Well, season's upon us, my friend.
It is. I'm very excited.
Who's gonna win the league?
Oh,
Leicester City.
Leicester
Foxes.
City. The Foxes. Come on, the Foxes.
They're so angry that they're not allowed in. Cut the grass the same way they used to, so they're just gonna.
I'm gonna go with Reading for the championship or whatever. They're in the championship, right?
They are the Royals.
Yeah, they are.
They're on their own level. Yeah. Okay, anything else to listen to this week, guys?
Randy Newman's Dark Matter. It's great.
Why is it great?
His political. Okay, his lyrically.
Are you really gonna lead with his political stances?
Has it got the Putin song on it?
Yeah, that's on
that's
it.
Fucked up.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was listening to it and going like. For, as much as I love Father John Misty, his take on the state of the world, it seems so juvenile compared to what Randy Newman can come up with. And that's no slight on Father John Misty. I just think he's a great writer. So check it out, guys.
Yeah.
That's it.
I heard the new Grizzly Bear album today. In advance.
What? Oh my God, he's gazumped us.
Yeah, very much so. And how does it sound?
Yeah, 10 thumbs up. It's really good. I only got one listen to it. It's kind of... similar territory as the last album, Shields.
Loved it.
But I think they've changed their way so many times now. It's Yeah, it's not exactly the same. It's not. I'm not saying they're doing a national on it or anything.
No,
but, no, it's really good. Yeah, I think I'll be listening to that one a lot.
Great. I meanwhile, I've been catching up on some Val Dunican. No, I haven't. I really haven't listened to much else because I've been busy and tired. But I was listening to some Hans Zimmer again because I watched Inception while violently hungover the other day. Do you know how hungover I was, Craig?
You watched Inception.
Apart from that, get this, right? Went, got a haircut, I'm in the hairdressers, and I'm looking at my phone.
Hungover?
Very hungover.
It was
the
last place
I was. It was the first thing I did on no food.
Jesus
okay?
Christ.
I met a friend of the show the night before for a few pints. I was kind of
done. Your name said friend?
Michael Pope of La Galaxy. Yeah. And I fucking...
Bad influence, that chap.
If you're listening, Mick, what up? Yeah, had some cans in his after some pints watching The Beach. Leonardo DiCaprio's
it's on Netflix now, I hear.
The Beach, yeah, there you go. So, stumbled home, crashed out, woke up the next day thinking it was like 9 in the morning. It wasn't, it was 20 past 12. And I thought, might go get a trim. So I had no food until about 4 that day. It was a very tough day. That was the night I went to see Batman Forever. So it was a hell of a fucking day.
Yeah.
So in the middle of it all, I'm there in the hairdressers waiting to get my haircut, and I'm looking at my phone, I'm chatting away on Facebook Messenger to someone, and about 10 minutes in I realise, this isn't who I thought I was talking to at all. It was like a completely different person.
What?
Yes. I know. Right?
And was
same
anything said?
Though, I guess, is that?
Somehow, amazingly, nothing untoward was said. But I was like, well, that's a new one. That's a bad state of affairs right there.
I assume the person had the same first name.
No, nothing. No, different gender as well.
You just like not.
They have they both have a blue sky in their profile photo, okay. I guess. Right. And I don't know.
Well, the cut looks pretty.
Yeah,
fresh,
yeah.
So
let's be fair.
Fly
now.
Coasts,
let's
mate.
Let's be fair. It's grown back in
ten
faster.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So yeah, you know, that's the show. probably a really bad episode, but
I enjoyed it.
What can you do?
It's the best one I've ever been on.
Well, we'll see what happens, Cullum. We'll see you down the road, my friend. okay, so listen, as always, because
your goose has been cooked, Colm.
Live show September 28th. Don't forget that. It'll be better than this. Closing us out this week. New Irish music, as always. We were supposed to play this track last week, but Dahi, friend of the show again, gazumped this person. This person is named David Anthony McGowan, but he has a band. They're called Bodies. It was originally a solo project. It's now kind of expanded. And it's very interesting stuff, I must say. Both singles that they've released so far were formed as part of recording sessions with members of Overhead the Albatross, Squarehead, Kid Karate, Blooms, and Lethal Dialect, or as he's now known, Paul Allwright. So there's a planned EP coming out next year with what sounds like a cavalcade of superstars in front and behind the mic. So yeah, here's a taste. The song's called I'm Waiting. My name is David William Hanrady. This has been No Encore. It will be No Encore. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in.
Thank you
very much for having me.
Yeah, a round of applause for our guest.
Yeah, that's for you. That's for you, man.
Cheers,
enjoy it.
Thank you.
I'm going to go get some sleep. Here's a song.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Summer vacation, here we come.
Yep, I packed the craft beers I got at Total Wine.
Did you remember a bathing suit?
No, but I did pack a bunch of summer wines. Whites, rosés, Zinfandels.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.